Hi, and welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Good, a registered nutritional therapy practitioner and functional medicine practitioner. Join me as we explore thyroid, brain, and fatigue conditions with positivity. From Hashimoto's to multiple sclerosis, chronic fatigue to adrenal dysfunction, I've got you covered. With expert advice and tips to help you take action now and inspiring real patient stories from successful individuals who refuse to let their health hold them back. Start your journey to good health today. And don't forget to come and join the conversation on Instagram at good_health. That's G-O-O-D-E. Or visit my website at nicolegoodhealth.com to find out more. Today, I'm welcoming Lorna Devine onto the Good Health Podcast. Lorna is a psychologist, a cognitive behavioral therapist, and a high-functioning anxiety specialist for high-performing individuals and entrepreneurs. After 12 years working in therapy and the coaching industry and having worked with thousands of clients, including members of the global royal family, high-performing individuals, and founders working in startups and technology companies in Silicon Valley, and having struggled with high-functioning anxiety herself many years ago, Lorna discovered that to truly create freedom from high-functioning anxiety, a powerful combination of evidence-based therapies, tools, and coaching is required. This developed into her signature method, the Devine Method, which she uses to create a blend of evidence-based therapies such as CBT together with compassion-focused therapy, life coaching, and high-performing coaching to create a truly unique, intuitive, and holistic package of support. Prior to setting up her business, she worked in various sectors for over 12 years, including the National Health Service, independent, charitable, education in state and independent schools and research sectors as a psychologist and CBT therapist. She's worked with and been featured in leading brands such as BBC News, Harper's Bazaar, Sweaty Betty, Sheer Looks, Heartcore, Hip and Healthy, Rituals, F54, and many more. Today, we're going to be discussing high-functioning anxiety, how it impacts your life, and what you can do to live better. So welcome, Lorna, to today's episode of the Good Health Podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat today.
Yeah, so we work with similar people, but from different sort of modalities. So I work with sort of high performers, optimizing their energy, their immunity. You work with high performers as well on that anxiety, stress angle from more of a psychology point of view. And stress is something that I see as a huge trigger for chronic health conditions. It's something that all the autoimmune people that I work with, usually at some point when we do the health history, there has been stress somewhere along the way. It may not be the whole picture, but it's definitely part of the picture. But let's start with this idea of high performing anxiety. Let's sort of dig into that first, because I always think when people think of anxiety, or if you ever say to somebody, you know, I've struggled with anxiety and things like that, people have this image of what a person with anxiety looks like. And I think that's probably very different to the actual reality for many people that are struggling with anxiety of how they actually are in kind of day-to-day life. So just tell us a little bit about this kind of high-performing anxiety and what that looks like for people.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's one of the challenges with the high-performing anxiety. I might say high-functioning anxiety, but that's like what the term that I use, so we can use them interchangeably. But I think that's one of the challenges, is that actually it's not very noticeable. It's often actually really hidden, because on the outside, people look like they have it all together. They've got a really successful job. They usually look quite calm as well, when actually on the inside, they're struggling with anxiety, stress, overwhelm. And I think that's what can be tricky, because a lot of people look to people with high functioning anxiety for support. They see them as like the strong ones and the ones that got it all together and, you know, just don't struggle at all. And I think that can be hard, because it can also feed into the belief that, oh, I shouldn't seek support because actually I've got everything. I should have everything like all together. Some people feel guilty for seeking support because everyone around them thinks they've got it all together.
I know Matthew Perry said like he was the funny guy to cover the sort of the depression and things like that that he was going through. And actually he said, I remember reading somewhere, he sort of said like the funniest people are actually sometimes the ones that are struggling the most. And I think it's a similar sort of concept with this, isn't it? It's that sort of actually some of the most successful people who look really successful from the outside, exactly like you said, can actually be the ones that are struggling and maybe don't realize and push through. And, you know, it's not necessarily noticeable. I like the thing you said as well about almost the guilt around it. They feel like they shouldn't need help because they are successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really impactful, I think. How did you get into this work? Tell us a little bit about your sort of journey. How did you get into sort of the psychology and all of that side of things that you do?
So obviously I have my own business now, but before I set up my business, I was working as a psychologist and CBT therapist for over 12 years in different clinics, hospitals, schools. I guess to keep it kind of brief, it's a bit of a long story, but to keep it brief, I think what happened was when I was working in the NHS, I think I was definitely that person with high-functioning anxiety. And I think for me, I was pushing through. I was working 7 days a week. And you might kind of relate to this, but I was working 7 days a week because I had a few jobs. I was trying to get an experience that I needed to get on to the different courses to specialise in, you know, the CBT, to go on to my master's, to get the dream job. And I think for a period of time, that obviously it got me to where I wanted to be. But I think what happened for me was that I was pushing and pushing and overworking and then ended up burning out many times. And as you know, like, you can only push for so long before actually your body tells you to stop.
Yeah.
And I think after experiencing burnout many times and it started to impact me physically, I kind of had this like moment where I was like, something needs to change. And I realized, like, being in the NHS and working a few different jobs at the same time wasn't going to be sustainable long term. Like, I knew I have to look after myself. Obviously, I was working as a therapist, but like the work-life balance, like, that was impossible. Like, partly due to like the setup of the NHS, you don't have control over your schedule. You're just like back to back with clients. And that wasn't good for me, my nervous system. So yeah, I decided to, I guess, go down a different route. Went on my own kind of journey of self-discovery, which started in Bali. And I think it was from there that I realized that actually for me, I needed a combination of the therapy and coaching, which kind of feeds into why I set up my method and my bespoke program.
It's interesting. I think we've only had one person who is a practitioner. Obviously, we've had some people who are on the patient side on the podcast, but I think we've only had one person who's a practitioner come on the podcast who has not had their own health journey into where they are today, if they're a health practitioner. And the one that didn't had a sports background, so an optimizing health background. So there was a story there. It just wasn't a health sort of health condition. But I think that's really common, is that practitioners actually get into what they're doing and into the area that they work because they relate to it. And I think that makes the best practitioners, I think, because we understand it. We understand what people are going through. How did the burnout impact your outlook on life? How did that sort of change your views? Because you've said, like, a little, you know, the NHS thing, that was the dream job. That was what you pushed to do. And, you know, I had the same thing. I was at med school studying neuroscience. I wanted to stay on, do medicine. That was the dream job. So I, you know, similar experience. But how has that experience of burnout sort of changed your outlook on what is, you know, the dream job?
Yeah. Do you know what? I think it was such a wake-up call for me. It made me totally reassess, like, my whole life and what I wanted for my career. It made me realize that the importance of your health, because again, working 7 days a week, even if you're in your 20s, clearly that's not very good for your body. I think that was like the catalyst for me to think, actually, who am I? Because up until that point, I was very, like, my identity was very much around like being a psychologist, being a therapist, working in the NHS and, you know, for different clinics. And I remember being asked, what do you really enjoy? Like, what are your interests? And I really struggled, like, apart from going to the gym, which is something I always loved, I actually really struggled to actually say what made me happy or what my interests were. And I think a lot of people also struggle with that. I see that a lot with high performers. If you ask them, what do you really enjoy? Some people do really struggle with it because they face their whole identity and self-worth around achieving. So it kind of changed my outlook in terms of actually, like, who am I, and just reconnecting back to who I am again, and actually making sure that I schedule in time for me, time for friends, time for family, prioritize my health. I guess it made me just kind of rethink, like, work. Like, I love my work and I love my business, but there's also more to work and more to business. So that was definitely like a big change in the way that I was thinking and living. And it also really made me like reassess what my values were, because when I was in the NHS, I realized that I wasn't living in alignment with any of my values. Like, one of them was freedom. So again, it made me just actually get clear on what they are. And then to also like keep checking in with myself and ask myself, am I living in alignment with them? Because often when you're not, that's when you're not so happy, right? Or you're not that satisfied.
And we get on that treadmill, don't we? It's so easy to get on the treadmill and not be able to get off. Because I think two things. One, we either get where maybe there's financial commitments and, you know, things like that. So we can't get off the treadmill and just sort of say, I'm giving up my job and walking away entirely. But the other thing as well is that I don't think we necessarily look, sort of assess, how are we actually feeling on that treadmill? Like, oh, you know, maybe it was something that we wanted to do, but actually once you get into it and you're doing it, we don't very regularly sort of look back and think, actually, how do we feel now doing it? Is that something that actually is bringing us joy? Do we enjoy it? Is it something we really want to do? Or actually, is there something else out there now that we've learned about? Because I think as well that you can go down one path, but there's always other paths that you can kind of, that can lead you to. Much like you're saying, you know, going down the NHS, okay, so you've not sort of stayed in that, but it's led you to doing what you do now. But I think it takes you actually actively thinking, am I staying on this treadmill or do I need to take a different path and go down somewhere else? And we don't do that very often.
No, definitely. And I think what I see as well, and it's the same for me, it's only when like a lot of people reach burnout or their relationship breaks down or their health, you know, something goes wrong with their health, then they're like, actually, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's only, I don't know, it's tricky, isn't it? Because often those points where people are actually like, oh, actually, am I happy? Why am I at this place? Because we're so focused on getting to this end goal.
Yeah. And it is that thing, isn't it, of if you don't sort of focus on your health will force you to focus on it at some point.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's that, I always say that. I always say it to my clients. I'm like, if you don't prioritize your health and you don't put that first, and also if you don't prioritize your health, this, all those other things that you want to do, you probably can't do as well as you would want to do them. You know, so it is important to think about these things and kind of put yourself first. Do you see a connection between the fact that high performers are often ambitious, they're often the type of people who will kind of push themselves? Is there a personality type there that is connected to kind of the development of the stress and the anxiety? Because it's something that I definitely see from the optimal health sort of perspective, the side that I work on. You know, a lot of these people are, and I class myself as one of these people, I'm a perfectionist. I've talked about this before on the podcast, and I've had to, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time. You know, it means that you do good work, but also at the same time, it can sort of hold you back. But do you see those sort of personality traits coming through with the connection with the high performers to developing that sort of stress and anxiety?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think there's loads of factors that can kind of play into it, right? In terms of the development of stress and anxiety. But for sure, I'd say like having an anxious predisposition, like a lot of people that are a little bit anxious as a child often then go on, you know, to follow, maybe they're more on like the anxious side or like they're worrying about certain things. I'd say perfectionism is like a really key thing. Whether you're a perfectionist or have perfectionist tendencies, I think that can, yeah, it can have such an impact. Because if you're setting these really like unrealistic high standards for yourself, you have really high expectations of yourself, maybe other people, maybe your team, then it's a tricky balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think, like you say, to an extent, I think it gets us, a lot of people who are perfectionists, to a point where we want to be, because you put so much in and you're, you know, so focused on making things, you know, as good as they can be. We're trying to get them perfect. But of course, over time, that will result in like a lack of a work-life balance. It can cause stress because you're putting so much pressure on yourself. Anxiety, because maybe you're trying to, you know, meet these high standards that maybe are very unrealistic. So I'd say that definitely plays a part. I also think there's an aspect of like a lot of high performers have developed overworking as a bit of a coping strategy. This is like one coping strategy, maybe as a child or, you know, something's happened in their life. So they've then developed overworking as a coping strategy, which I think can then kind of feed into that too.
I think I do that. That's like my go-to is like, it sounds daft, but if I'm stressed, it's like, I'll throw myself into work.
Yeah.
I definitely think that's something that I know I do and I have to watch. And it probably is one of the things that's actually giving a person stress, but it's also becomes a coping mechanism.
Yeah, definitely. I can also totally relate. That was definitely one of mine. And even now, it's something that I would maybe turn to, but I think it's like having that awareness, isn't it? Actually, that's how you cope. That's your like go-to coping strategy. And then having that awareness, when you do it, you can think, actually, is this healthy right now? Maybe I can do something that's going to be more helpful instead. but it's a really common one that I see amongst high performers.
Yeah. I saw you talking on your socials about how being a highly sensitive person can impact you as an entrepreneur. You were talking about this on your Instagram. And I know, you know, we both work with a lot of entrepreneurs and we're also both business owners ourselves. And I think this is something that actually people forget when they go into our line of work. You're a practitioner, for, you know, first and foremost. Obviously, it's the most important role within your business. But you're also a business owner. You're also an entrepreneur. You've also got all these other hats that you've now got to wear, as well as just being, you know, whether it's a therapist or a nutrition practitioner, whatever it might be. There's lots of hats that you've got to wear. What's the difference between a highly sort of sensitive person and a high achiever, high performing, high functioning anxiety that you talked about? And second, how can either or both of those things impact you as a business owner?
So a highly sensitive person, so firstly, it's not a disorder. I think a lot of people think being a highly sensitive person is like a disorder, but it's just a personality trait that we're born with. And they have this innate trait called sensory processing sensitivity. So it just means that you have an increased sensitivity to certain stimuli. So like a lot of highly sensitive people really struggle with like bright lights or really loud noises, like ambulances going past. Oh my God, like I'm just like, it's so loud. But yeah, so basically highly sensitive people often, like they care a lot. They're often people that really, really care. They process information more deeply. They think more deeply than others. They can get more like easily overstimulated, more easily overwhelmed than other people. You might notice that if you're a highly sensitive person that you kind of sense like you can pick up on certain things. Like you might walk into a room and be able to pick up on the emotions of other people. And you'll notice, I don't know, if there's like a chair out of place, like highly sensitive people are more likely to notice these things. But there are also so many strengths, like in business, a lot of highly sensitive people pay a lot of attention to detail. They're really intuitive, which can obviously be really good when you're making, you know, certain decisions in your business. And obviously building relationships if you're really caring. And you've worked on the boundary side, I'll come to the how it can impact you, but yeah, boundary side, then that can actually really help you build business relationships. So that's like a summary of being a highly sensitive person. High functioning anxiety, so I always just describe it as the kind of anxiety that's hidden, that no one really notices. But often people are either struggling with anxiety or physical symptoms of anxiety, like heart palpitations, or they're feeling stressed, overwhelmed, worrying a lot, procrastinating, trying to make things perfect, struggling to relax about feeling guilty. So that's a summary of the highly sensitive people and then high functioning anxiety. In terms of how it can impact you as a business owner, being a highly sensitive person can impact you in different ways. When you're more easily overstimulated and overwhelmed, that can be tricky, right? Because like you say, we can be a therapist, nutritionist. But when we've got, you know, there's emails coming in, you've got multiple WhatsApps, you've got a million different hats, that will make you more easily overstimulated and more overwhelmed, which can then increase your likelihood of experiencing stress and anxiety. So that's one way. What I also see a lot as well, and something I struggled with initially, was self-doubt, doubting yourself, your abilities, like holding yourself back. I listen to people really struggle with boundaries. Like I think I see it a lot. And again, it's something I struggled with when I first set up my business, like the setting boundaries of clients, also in your personal life. But yeah, setting boundaries with clients, your time, your energy, overgiving, wanting to help so much because you care so much, you then really want to help. So then you overgive. So there are a lot of ways that it can.
But I think it's really interesting that like all these things we've touched on, the perfectionism, you know, being highly sensitive, all of these things, we sort of see them maybe as a negative sometimes, but there are positives to them as well. So that they're almost, they're that double-edged sword, aren't they? You know, all these personality traits have a positive side and a negative side. And I think it's being aware of them, knowing if you have these personality traits and then being able to counter the bad side so that you can use the good side in whatever you're doing, in your job, in your business, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I often say to clients, like, say we use perfectionism as an example. What I often say to them is that we're going to kind of get rid of the unhelpful parts of perfectionism and keep the helpful parts. We'll get rid of the unrealistic high expectations that are actually impacting you in a negative way and impacting your life, your relationships, your health and well-being. But we're still going to keep your high standards. You can still aim for excellence and still have high standards. We're not getting rid of your high standards. So I think it's, like you say, drawing on the helpful parts, but removing the unhelpful parts that are actually impacting you in a negative way.
Yeah, I think that's really, it's a really important message, I think, because I think we do see things as a negative sometimes, and there are a lot of benefits to them. I know for what the one for me was when I first started was the boundaries thing, exactly as you've described it. Particularly, I think when you're in a caring field, a compassionate job, you know, I think it's putting those boundaries in place is actually probably more vital in that sort of work, even though, again, it's one of these things, isn't it? This sort of double-edged sword thing. It's like you feel like you're in that job, so you feel like you need to give more because it's a compassionate job and you want to care about people. But I think because of that, you almost need to put more boundaries in place because it can be quite emotional work as well. And, you know, you get very involved in people's lives and things like that with it. And the boundaries was one that I mean, I remember when I first started, like, you know, my client WhatsApp was going off like all night. It was going off on a Sunday evening. It was, you know, and I had to get to the point where I was like, the WhatsApp will be open at this. People can send messages anytime they want. I will go on it and answer messages during work hours. And that was just a boundary that I had to put in place because I just found that I was literally on it all the time. And that wasn't good for my own health. It definitely wasn't good for burnout. It is interesting how all of these things have sort of two sides to them. You know, even with this, the sort of the boundaries and things, it's a compassionate feel. We feel like we should give more, but actually that's probably more of a reason to put a boundary in place.
100%, 100%. And do you know what I realized as well? Like with that, you know, I offer WhatsApp support too between sessions on my coaching program. And what I realized, like I definitely struggled it initially, but what I realized is like by us setting those boundaries, we're also helping our clients.
Yeah.
Particularly the ones that have businesses too, because they'll see that actually like you can have boundaries, but you can still be a good, nice person that cares, but it doesn't mean anything. Like if you're not replying on weekends, that's just your boundaries and actually you're looking after yourself and you're prioritizing yourself. So you're being an example for your client.
Yeah.
And I've had clients ask me, like, say, like, oh, you're putting your boundaries in place, but in a good way. They were like, oh, okay, yeah, this is good. And they started to do it.
It's that practice what you preach thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of living the life that you are telling people to live.
Yeah, 100%.
If people are listening to this and maybe they have not recognized that they have this sort of, you know, high functioning anxiety, because I do think people that do have it do tend to be the type of people who will push through. I know that's certainly true for me. I've always been the sort of person who will just keep going and just keep pushing through. And I think they're also sort of maybe say things are normal. You know, we're tired because we're busy. You know, that sort of, I see this a lot actually with, particularly with the chronic health conditions where in the early days before maybe pre-diagnoses, people have sort of said, well, I'm tired or I've got a bit of, you know, I've got maybe a bit of tingling in my hands. I'm a bit tired. I feel a bit cold, you know, things like that. But I'm really tired. I'm overworked. I've got young children at home. I've got parents to look after, you know, and we just put it down to so many different things that we sort of almost don't realize what's happening. What are the things for people with sort of the high functioning anxiety sort of specifically? What sort of signs and symptoms would you be telling them to look out for? What should they sort of be aware of and start trying to notice in themselves?
Yeah, and I think that's so true. I hear that a lot. People are like, well, this is just the way my brain is wired. I've always been overthinker. I've always been up all night thinking. When actually, that's not normal, right? Be thinking like 24/7 and feel anxious all of the time or stressed. So yeah, in terms of signs, so I would say like difficulties managing stress, because stress is part of life. But I think when it gets to the point where actually you're feeling constantly stressed and you're actually struggling to manage things, that's one sign. I say difficulties like switching off. So coming home and just not being able to switch off, or like if you're trying to relax, you're feeling really guilty for relaxing. Always feeling like you need to be productive. You can't just sit there and do nothing. Something I see a lot with clients is procrastination. So they come to me and they're just procrastinating for different reasons. They think they're lazy when actually it's not the case. There's often something else behind it. But they'll procrastinate and then there'll be a deadline and then they'll be up to like 4 or 5 a.m. trying to meet the deadline. They always meet the deadline because they're a high performer, but it then means that their sleep is affected the next day. They feel really like low in energy. I'd say also like a bit of irritability at times. I think over time, when people get so overwhelmed, they can then get irritable with people around them. What else? Imposter syndrome is quite common. Doubting yourself or feeling like you're a fraud. Like, I see this a lot. Either entrepreneurs or CEOs, partners, they've obviously got to this level and they wouldn't have got there, you know, if they couldn't do what they're doing. But actually, they don't think they should be in a role that they're doubting. Oh, I'm a partner, but actually, I shouldn't be a partner. So I see that a lot. What else? Overthinking.
Yeah, a lot of them are similar to the burnout. That's when I work with people with burnout on the health front. The other one I see is people disconnecting as well from family and friends, maybe not feeling as motivated at work. Yeah, tired all the time. All that wired, tired and wired, you know, sort of, but sometimes tired all through the day and then wired at night. So that second wind sort of later on, like you said, so that stress short fuse, you know, that sort of thing. It's very similar to sort of the burnout symptoms, but maybe comes pre actually reaching burnout front. And the impact, I think, on our health with all of that is so huge. You know, I work with people who've got this, we call it, you know, I know you said you've got your terminology, we call it the HPA axis dysfunctions, but it's what's regularly known as kind of, you know, burnout or adrenal fatigue, you know, whatever people want to call it. But and their adrenals are either, you know, sky high with cortisol, or they are flatlined, and they may have blood sugar problems, they may have cholesterol problems, lots of the cardiometabolic things going wrong, immune health is poor, you know, they pick everything up. A lot of people come to me and they say, I catch everything that my children bring home. We shouldn't. That's not, you know, it's one of those things that I've actually got some clients I'm working with at the moment that are a couple. And I started working with the husband first, and he was like catching everything that the children get and everything like that. And I was like, it's not normal. We need to work on your immune health, because you've got your immune system. Kids are meant to pick things up. That's how they build their immune systems. You know, we should have an immune system that has already seen these things, and we shouldn't pick everything up. And then he got where he was like a lot better. And his wife was like, right, well, now he's not picking everything up off the children, but I am. So I'm coming to work with you, because I don't want to pick everything up that the kids are picking up. You know, and we've worked on that. We've worked on blood sugar. We've worked on, you know, they both had like blood sugar, cholesterol, you know, these sorts of things going wrong. And I think a lot of that, and energy, of course, is the big one. That's why I work on, I always say, what, you know, people say, what do you work on? I work on energy and immunity, whether it's from the preventative side of things like this optimizing health burnout, or whether it's from they've actually, the stress has actually gone further and caused a chronic illness. You know, it's energy and immunity that I'm working with. They're the two key things. And a bit like you said about your method, that's why I have my method, the mitoimmune method. Mito is the energy, immune is the immunity. It's amazing the impacts that all of these things, that, you know, you're saying are really just kind of personality traits, and then can become things like high functioning anxiety, that can then become burnout, that can then become chronic health issues. It's that sort of pathway is so powerful, and we really need to jump in earlier with people. That's why I like doing the preventative work, because we need to jump in early with people. So spotting these things, these personality traits, knowing that you're that sort of person, knowing that you have some of these coping strategies, I think can be really, really beneficial for people even from a health front, not just from a psychological front, but from both sides. You know, it's only going to be preventative with health as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that's the thing. I think a lot of people wait until, I think like I mentioned, they wait until they've reached burnout or something, you know, significant has happened in their life. They're like, oh, maybe now I'll get support. Maybe now actually it's bad enough for me to get support. When actually, like you say, what we want to do is help them earlier on. And I spoke to someone the other day. This is a little bit rare, but I spoke to someone the other day, and they actually said they feel like they were on the edge of burnout or approaching it, and they wanted to prevent it from happening. So that's why they've reached out now.
Yeah.
And I think we need more of that.
Yeah, I'm getting more. More recently, I'm finding more and more people are reaching out sort of, or they've maybe been and had, because a lot, you know, like a lot of companies these days will do the sort of BUPA health checks and things like that. And like maybe there's nothing really wrong. They're not, you know, everything's come back kind of okay, but their blood sugar's maybe a little bit out, or their cholesterol's a little bit high. And they sort of think, oh, you know, and I do feel a bit stressed, and I am maybe feeling, and it maybe is just the thing that jolts them to thinking, actually, maybe I am heading in the direction of burnout a little bit. And I've had more people reaching out lately that are on that, actually, I don't want to hit that point, because that's when we can't work, right? When we can't be productive. And I know you've talked about having burnout, and you know, I've hit that point where I couldn't work for a long time. And you know, it's like we don't want to hit that point. You want to be able to stay productive and still be able to work and see your friends and see your family and do everything that we want to do. It's not about, I think a lot of times as well, when people come to work on their health and work from whichever side it is, they think that working on it will be a restrictive thing. And it will be like, oh, well, we'll say like, you know, oh, you've got to pull back. You can't do this. You can't do that. You know, and it's not about that. It's actually about optimizing the health to the point that you can go out there and live the life that you want. I remember one client said to me, he was like, well, all his test results came back and there were quite a few things going on. He came to me as wanting to avoid burnout, you know, optimal sort of optimizing health. But there was quite a lot came back actually in his bloods and things like that. And I remember him saying to me like, oh my God, like, am I going to have to give up my job? He was, I mean, real, you know, high performance, he's got top job. And I was like, no, like, that's not the point. It's not about saying you can't do this anymore. It's about getting your health back on track so that actually you can go and keep doing this for as long as you want to do it.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. But I think people always see it as actually we're going to kind of restrict them, but it's the opposite. It's about actually making people be able to do the things they love for longer.
I love that. I love that. What helped you like when you were recovering from health? And you mentioned burnout.
So my burnout, I definitely burnt out. I think mine was a mix of things because I obviously had the autoimmune that came into play. So I am the typical, the perfectionist, the one that pushes through, blah, 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 you know, all of this that we've talked about. And I did. And a part of that was because I wasn't getting answers from anywhere. I couldn't get answers to what was wrong with me. So everybody was, the doctors were like, there's nothing wrong with you, you're fine. So I was like, well, if I'm fine, like, I'm 20, I should be able to be at university and be fine, you know? And so I pushed through. I am that personality anyway. I will push through. So I will accept that from my part. But yeah, I think so definitely for me, I mean, I had, my triggers were, so I had a viral infection that was a definite trigger for the autoimmunity. But I had that at the time that I had a lot of stress. So stress definitely played a part in being a trigger. And I think the burnout for me came from battling to try and get answers with the health, pushing through because everybody was telling me I was fine. So keeping, you know, keep going, keep pushing through. If I'm fine, I should be able to do all of this. And being 20 and kind of thinking, you know, you should be able to do all of it. There is that element of, you know, I'm young. People are saying there's nothing wrong with me. So, you know, maybe I'm just tired. Like I did get to the point because, you know, so many doctors were telling me I was fine. I did get to the point where, and I've talked to my mum about this before, where I've said, occasionally I sat down, like I remember sitting down on the end of my bed, like, is this in my head? Am I actually ill? Or am I like, is this really in my head? Because I started to doubt myself. And actually I did. I had quite a serious autoimmune condition, but I then found functional medicine, nutrition, worked on my own health, got my autoimmune balanced. I'm, you know, a hell of a lot better these days. Still have the autoimmune condition because we can't get rid of them, but it's balanced and it's managed and I don't take meds. I don't get down that road. And that's a personal choice. I can only do that because I've balanced my health. But then I do have to make sure that I still keep on top of the things like the stress and, you know, and all of this and make sure I don't burn out because exactly like you said, if you've got those personality traits, it's very easy that, you know, you could do that again. I could, particularly, you know, setting up a business and things like that. It's, you know, like I do now and, you know, clinic's busy and I'm podcasting and I'm writing a book, you know, there's all these different things going on and, you know, it's like I could very easily burn out again. So I think it's being aware of all those things. And making sure that you don't, making sure that none of that triggers the autoimmunity again, doesn't cause a flare up. So I think for me, it was kind of two sides. It was the personality side and the pushing through, and I had stress, and I was at a very good school, so I had a lot of work stress around, and that was partially my own fault because I put that pressure on myself. It didn't come from, people always say to me, did it come from family? Did it come from the school? And I was like, well, it came from the school a little bit, but I put it on myself. You know, really, realistically, I was that person. So I think, yeah, stress was a huge part and definitely played a part. But then there was other aspects came in, like the viral trigger for me and then not getting answers on the health journey that became a real problem with burnout as well. That sort of really caused burnout too.
Yeah, John, that's really interesting. I wonder how many people actually have that in terms of not getting the answers.
So many.
Yeah, I can imagine that's pretty common. Because yeah, I can definitely relate to that part of it. Just made me like think as well. I 100% own the burnout. That was my fault. But I think as well, like not getting answers when you go to like your GP and say, actually, you know what? I'm feeling really tired. My energy is really low. I'm not sleeping.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, you're in your 20s, you know, to manage stress a bit better. I think that's an interesting one.
Yeah, I got told all sorts. I was told, and this was whilst I had a neurological autoimmune condition, and I was told, you've got stress. You need to just manage your stress better. You need to you're just a bit of a worrier. I got told that, which I am. I accept that. But that wasn't what was going on with my health. That was a separate thing. I got told by one doctor that I was a woman. So maybe I was just a little bit more sensitive. That went down really well. Yeah. So, you know, it's really easy though when people are telling you this. And, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I've seen some amazing doctors as well. These are the not so great stories. But I have seen some really good doctors as well. And there are excellent doctors out there and they've been brilliant. But you will get some who do put things down to distress or, you know, or your workload's getting to you or, you know, sort of, well, you're a woman, apparently. All of those things. And it is very easy to start doubting yourself. Very easy.
Definitely.
And I think that then in itself, it's almost a vicious cycle because that in itself then pushes the burnout because you push yourself because you think there's nothing wrong with you. So it becomes that vicious cycle that you really struggle to kind of get out of.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why a lot of people then don't reach out for help because they're like, well, I've gone to the doctors, nothing's wrong with me. You know, it must be in my head. I'm just making it up. I'm just going to push through. I don't need to get support because there's nothing wrong with me. And then I'll just, you know, go round and round and yeah.
Yeah, the number of people I work with where that's their story, where they've not been able to get answers. And they're either burnt out because they've not been able to get answers. So they think they sort of learn to think there's nothing wrong with them and keep pushing through. Or they've not got answers. So they've kept fighting to get answers. And that fight when you're not well is really hard. It's hard fighting against everybody telling you different, but you do know your own body. And I think that with burnout, with a chronic condition, whatever it is, listening to your own body is so important. It's and that's why the first appointment I do with everybody is the functional health assessment. A huge part of that is you tell me your story because it's great. I want to hear what your diagnoses are. I want to hear what the doctors have told you you've got. But at the same time, the more important part to me is tell me your story. Tell me what you think has happened in your body. How did you feel at that time? What was going on for you? Because you know your own body better than anyone.
It's so true. Again, I think it's kind of tuning into your intuition as well, isn't it? Because again, if you're doubting yourself, you can then doubt, oh, actually, do I know my body? Is it just I'm a worrier? Is it just stress and, you know, I just need to manage it better? Or is it actually there is something really going on with my body and I need to listen to it?
Yeah. I think it's really important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. And it's interesting how you get stuck in those cycles.
Yeah, definitely.
So we talked a little bit, we sort of mentioned the methods, but tell us a little bit about, because I know we both have our own sort of signature method that we use in clinic. And tell us a little bit about your method that you use with clients. What makes your method sort of different and what's your approach?
Yeah, sure. So it's called the Divine Method. And it's basically a combination of evidence-based therapy, like cognitive behavioral therapy, compassion-focused therapy, and then life coaching, high-performance coaching, and mindfulness. And I also bring in my own experience. So I went on, obviously, my own journey with high-functioning anxiety and burnout. So when relevant, I'll bring in my own experiences too. And I guess what makes it different is, as you know, I'm a qualified therapist and I do offer CBT as a separate service. What I realized when I was working with high performers is that actually they were finding therapy wasn't quite enough. It was good to help them gain self-awareness, to help them like identify certain thoughts or limiting beliefs that were holding them back and start to like help them master their mindset. But what I saw is it wasn't helping them and it didn't help me either to actually get to where I wanted to be. Like often a lot of them, because they're so like focused on like achieving and growing as a person, they also want that side where they can also keep moving, like keep moving forward. And I think sometimes what I find with therapy is that it can keep you not always in the past, but a little bit in the past. So it can be focused very much on like strategies, which is what a lot of CBT is about, which is helpful to an extent. But what I found is that a combination of the therapy and the coaching is much more effective and it just suits high performers a lot better too. And also with the therapy, what I found being a therapist is that it didn't really address like some of the challenges that can come with being an entrepreneur or high performer. Like if we think about being an entrepreneur, like there's so much that I wasn't taught any of this in my training, like the risks that you take, investments you make, the loneliness that can come with running a business, the decisions that you have to make. There's just so much, the chronic stress, anxiety. There's like a different kind of anxiety. It's not the anxiety that like when we were taught in the CBT training, it's very different. to what can come with being an entrepreneur. So yeah, basically, I guess it's different because I'm combining the therapy and the coaching. But it's just a total holistic approach. And when I work with the clients, I tailor it totally to them. Like some people, there might be a little bit more of the therapy and some coaching. And then some of them might be more coaching, a little bit of the therapy. So it's just a total holistic approach to actually helping them manage high functioning anxiety, recover from burnout, but also at the same time, elevate their performance, their well-being, and improve their relationships.
I love that. I love the idea of, I love what you said about how this sort of the therapy side is looking to the past, and like adding in the coaching, you're sort of looking to the future as well, which I think is really important. I like that. I love that concept. Is there like a couple of tips or a little bit of advice that you could give to people listening to this, that maybe just a couple of things that if they're listening to this thinking, oh, that's me, which a lot of people I'm sure will be, what could they sort of do? What sort of things could they implement like straight away?
I think the first thing that I always say is to like just practice being a bit more open and be a little bit vulnerable, because I know this can be so hard. Like when you have done everything on your own and you haven't really opened up and you're just pretending that everything's fine. So even like your close friends, your loved ones, it can be really hard to actually open up and say, do you know what, I'm not actually okay. So I think over time, practice opening up with people that you feel really comfortable with, people that you really trust. And when they ask you that, like, how are you? Rather than like, yeah, I'm fine, actually just say
the answer of I'm fine.
Yeah. So common, I'm fine. Just for like, do you know what? Like, I'm not actually okay.
Yeah.
Or actually, do you know what? I'm struggling a bit of stress, or I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. Because what I've seen like from personal experience, but also with clients, is that actually that helps you create more meaningful relationships. It makes you more relatable, because I mean, I've heard in the past people just think like, they're like, you're just like this perfect person that has everything together, you're super successful, your whole life is together, and that's not relatable. Because that's definitely not the case at all. And when I tell them what was going on behind the scenes, they're like, oh my goodness, I had like no idea, like I thought you were just a perfect human being. I'm like, no, like definitely not. Even being a therapist, like we're not perfect at all. We're human beings that go through, you know, the same stuff as everyone else. So say that's one thing. The other thing that I see a lot with high performers is they often have the self-awareness. They've often like listened to all the podcasts. They've got all the notes on their notes sections on the phone. They've saved all the Instagram posts. They've read all the blogs. They've got the self-help books. Right?
Yeah.
And actually that's often not the problem with high performers. Like they have the self-awareness. But what they say to me when they come to me is they say, like, I know what's going on for me. And they do, because they're high performers, they're clever, they're intelligent people. But what they struggle with is actually the implementation and getting to the root of what's really going on for them. So they might know they're procrastinating because of this, but they think they're just being lazy. So actually, if they can get to the root of what's going on for them, it might be that they're a highly sensitive person, overwhelmed, and they've got too much on, so then they're procrastinating. Or it might be they're a perfectionist and they're trying to get things perfect and they don't want to fail, so then they're procrastinating. If you can get to the root of what's going on for you, that will help you much more than just trying to mask it with coping strategies, but just help you short term. So that's two things. The other thing is get clear on who you are outside of work. This can be can take a bit of time. I'm not saying it's like something you can kind of figure out straight away, but I think get clear on who you are outside of work, because by doing this, you'll create an identity and you'll build your self-worth around something that's not just achievements and work. Because, you know, if you don't get a client or a deal doesn't go through, if you base your whole self-worth and identity around achievements and your work, then that's just going to be crushed, right? If you can build it up and actually create more of an identity where you're not just like a psychologist or, a nutritionist or practitioner, then actually it won't affect you so much. Of course, it might have a bit of an impact, but it won't just totally crush your self-worth.
Yeah, I love what you said about getting to the root of things, because that's very much the message with functional medicine, is getting to the root cause of what's going on for a person. We always say we're less interested in the actual diagnosis and a lot more interested in the root cause. It's amazing the crossovers, even though we're in completely different modalities, the crossover of the way we work is very similar, really, in that sense. And I love that. I think always getting to the root cause of what's going on, whatever it is, whether it's health, psychology, whatever, I think is really important. How and where can people, we'll put all your links below in the show notes so that people can find you quickly, but where are you most active? How can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, so Lorna_Devine, LinkedIn, Lorna Devine, and then my website, lornadevine.com.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me today. We will put those links below in the show notes so that people can reach out if they've got any questions or if they recognize themselves and they want to talk to you about it. We'll put everything down there so that people can get to it quickly. But thank you so much for your time today. Really enjoyed having this conversation with you.
Amazing. Thank you. It's very lovely to speak with you too.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Good Health Podcast. Do share the episode with anyone who you think it may benefit or who may enjoy it. And help me spread the word by rating the episode or leaving a review. If you want more, you can find other episodes in the series on your podcast app or sign up to my free newsletter. Not only will you get information on new episodes launching, but we cover lots of health topics with the Ask Nicole section where you can send in your questions, my favorite recipes, my favorite products, tips and tricks to help you on the road to good health, and much more. You can sign up free of charge at nicolegoodhealth.com/newsletter. Also linked below. I hope you have a lovely week. Don't forget to hit subscribe, and I'll see you next time.